I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's going on, everybody? It is Tuesday, July the 8th, getting ready for Saints training camp as players report in just two more weeks, gearing up for the Black and Gold's presence on the practice field. And like I mentioned last segment in Triple Option, looks like a helmet release coming out tomorrow. The Black and Gold will be unveiling. Curious to see what this new helmet looks like for the Saints. The last one was released recently was that black helmet. And I had mentioned it didn't bring them much luck going 0-4 so far in them. And then one thing I always wish they had done was wearing that black helmet with the all-black uniform instead of with the white uniform. I felt like it would have went better. Curious to see now a lot of folks speculating that this helmet that's coming out tomorrow is going to be a white helmet with a gold fleur-de-lis on it, kind of a black pinstripe going down the middle. It'll be, interesting to see what the Saints do here. A little bit of a new look with their, I guess, quote-unquote alternate uniform. A lot of folks clamoring for that old-school look, though, I know, Charlie.
I think it's going to be white. I mean, we'll figure it out officially tomorrow, but that just kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Like, the last big helmet release that they had, as you mentioned, was the black one with, the certain design up the
middle. And that one was meh.
Yeah, no, I agree. But it just kind of feels like this one's going to be white. I don't know. We'll find out tomorrow, but they're definitely teasing it early on.
another tease was today on Netflix, the second season of the series Quarterback come out. I'm curious to see that as well. The first season I thought was a huge success, and curious to see this year with the likes of Joe Burrow, Kirk Cousins, and Jared Goff in the mix. But a lot of buzz have been going around today. I guess folks plowing through those episodes early on, hearing Kirk Cousins saying he might have re-signed with the Minnesota Vikings last offseason had he known the Falcons were going to draft a quarterback in the first round. Come on, Kirk.
Yeah, if you go back, though, to last April, that was the big shocker, right, of the 2024 NFL draft was the Falcons taking Michael Penix 8th overall. So,
It took Kirk Cousins by surprise,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, obviously Kirk wasn't prepared for it. And I haven't watched Quarterback. I didn't watch season one of it.
Oh, really? Okay.
I saw the clip on Twitter of Joe Burrow, yelling with Zach Taylor.
I did see that as well.
That was pretty interesting. That was a cool little insight. Like, he was really pissed off that they had, I think, a bunch of false start penalties or offside penalties throughout the course of the game. It's just like these are mental mistakes.
Right, we played like garbage even though they won.
They won the game. They played, I think there was the Titans
game
where they won by 10 points. Or they beat the Titans pretty handily. Granted, most teams beat the Titans pretty handily last year as well. But he was frustrated. And so Zach Taylor goes over on the sideline and starts trying to talk to Joe. And he's just like, it's the mental mistakes. And there's a lot of expletives thrown in there that obviously we can't say on the radio. But it was just like, oh, that's kind of interesting. That's cool insight. Maybe I'll go check it out. So, I didn't see season one of it. But
season one, I was definitely surprised on how much access you got into these guys' personal lives, especially with Kirk Cousins was in season one as well. And you actually went to player therapy with him. And I would figure that was like a closed door session would want to be aired, but he was more than willing to do that. Patrick Mahomes also in season one, you get to see his life, and man, oh man, when he gets done from a game coming home, there's a whole crowd of folks waiting for him there. I was surprised by that, thinking, after going through the rigors of a game, you just want to come home, chill and relax, but it seemed like a big old party atmosphere at the Mahomes, the house.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, once again, I didn't see season one, so I'll probably watch a little bit of season two because at least that Burrow clip really intrigued me. Just kind of getting some insight into the former LSU Heisman and national championship winner. That's, I don't even want to say it's been a tumultuous start to his tenure in Cincinnati because it's really stuff that's outside of his control with what's been going wrong. Joe Burrow played at an MVP level this past year, but you can't help not having a defense. So it is what it is.
Same old problems for those Bungles.
Yeah, and it all starts at the top. We know that.
What was curious for me in that season one, though, the other quarterback, the third one that they had besides Kirk Cousins, Pat Mahomes, was Marcus Mariota.
I do remember that.
Not very interesting.
Yeah. So this year it's Burrow, Cousins,
Jared Goff, and Cousins. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, Goff is a little bit more interesting, I guess you would say. Especially, so it goes back to last year, right? It goes back to the past season.
Right.
I mean, that Lions season was so special for Detroit fans. I know that it didn't end the way that they wanted to because Jaden Daniels, that kid with the Washington Commanders, came in and whoops them behind and knocked them out in the divisional round of the NFC playoffs, despite them getting the one seed in the NFC. They had all these high expectations. The season, the regular season, went great. So that's going to be kind of interesting to see, is I guess, you know, the progression of the Detroit Lions from Jared Goff's perspective, leading them all the way to that top seed in the NFC before they got bounced in the first round, or that they played in the divisional round of the playoffs.
Yeah, they definitely stepped it up this year with the likes of, you know, Joe Burrow, Kirk Cousins, and Jared Goff. Like I said, Marcus Mariota wasn't really interesting to anyone, I think.
Yeah, he's a backup. I mean, it is what it is. The other three are starters. I guess now Kirk Cousins is technically a backup, but I mean, is he going to stay in Atlanta long term, Steve?
I was surprised he wasn't let go of this offseason.
I guess it's just the dead money hit. I would need to do a little bit of research into that.
It's a pretty expensive backup they got over there.
Trust me, I know. So, you know, we'll see what happens with him.
Yeah, meanwhile, the Saints, we know they are in, you know, the finding out come training camp who's going to be that signal caller for them. There's been speculation from both sides. I've heard, you know, Spencer Rattler has more of the experience than a Tyler Shuck because he's got at least a season under his belt, has started some games in the NFL, whereas you look at Tyler Shuck coming into this, his supporters feel like he's had plenty of college experience and was taken in the second round because he's a guy that the Saints feel can immediately come in, be a plug and play, I guess you could say, kind of QB to fit in Kellen Moore's system to see how that rocks. I'm just anxious to see how this all shakes out come training camp. I know they're going to be here to start camp, then head out west for a little bit and come back to wrap things up. But maybe this year more than any, Charlie, the preseason games are going to be really interesting to just see how that QB competition is shaken out.
That's the number one thing that we're going to be watching throughout training camp
constantly
and into the preseason. Everyone wants to know, oh, is Spencer Rattler going to beat out Tyler Shuck, or is Tyler Shuck going to be the guy? Did you see, I think it was Barstool, or maybe it was part of my take, had the QB ranking. Did you see that, Steve? Like, they had it in tier lists, and then all the way at number 32 was whoever the heck the Saints are going to start at quarterback.
I did see that. Yeah.
It's like, oh, you know, hopefully that's bulletin board material for these guys to go out and prove everybody wrong. I mean, it'll be fun to see the quarterback competition because it's going to be very spirited as well. But Tyler Shuck mentioned it when we were listening to his audio from the Manning Passing Academy. Same thing with Spencer Rattler on the Rich Eisen show a couple weeks back. It's a spirited kind of competition, but it's also a respectful competition that both guys are, you know, going to try and make each other better in the process too. So it's obviously something that we'll keep a very, very close eye on over the coming months.
Hoping this O-line and the targets around whatever quarterback is can stay healthy, because that's why I give the grade on Spencer Rattler's rookie season an incomplete, because there were just too many other variables in there that it's not fair to judge him on.
It's that, and I mean, it's injuries, right? So, you know, they had, and once again, I think this may have been Bleacher Report, where they gave every NBA team a grade for their 2024-25 season.
Oh, Lord.
For the Pelicans, it just had like the kind of injured emoji. They were the only team without a letter grade. And you saw teams like, I think Phoenix got an F. Obviously deserved. OKC gets like the A+. So the two sides of the spectrum. And I was interested to see, like, oh, I mean, what do you even give the Pelicans? Because they had so many issues with the injuries. And that's what they had, was the emoji saying, you can't really give them one because they were injured all season long. So,
sadly, way too many similarities there between the Saints and Pelicans because of that.
And that's why you see the low expectations from Vegas for both squads entering the years, because that's the last time we saw both teams was dealing with all these injury issues.
Sounding off, folks, on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. You can do that 504-260-1870 here on Sports Talk. Taking a break, we'll be back with even more, so stay tuned right after this on WWL.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We believe in the power of being everywhere. Listen to WWL anytime, anywhere. Get the WWL shows that you love and the local content you crave on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn apps. Back here on Sports Talk, talked a little NBA in that first segment, not much, but looking at some of the over-under win totals for the 2025-2026 season, this is from DK Sportsbook. The Pelicans' season win total for next season, they're not very high on them, Charlie. 31.5 victories after a 21-win season a year ago. That would be a big disappointment if the Birds are at least healthy going into this year.
So I'm going to sound like a homer. But
no.
I'm just being honest. Look at the talent that the Pelicans have on this roster.
Right.
The only way that they go under 31.5 wins is that they get wrecked by injuries like they were in the past season. Now, I know that people have criticized, oh, how do these players fit next to each other? That's the one thing that Joe Dumars continues to say. Just like we add these high IQ guys that will figure it out. Right. And they trust their coaching staff as well. The Pelicans 31.5, Steve, I know I had mentioned this in the 5 o'clock hour. It's only above the Suns, who are at 30.5, the Hornets at 24.5, the Nets at 21.5, the Wizards at 20.5, and the Jazz at 18.5.
The poor Jazz.
Well, and listen, if you're looking at some of these, because when I went through the full list of the 30 teams, a few of them stuck out like sore thumbs, which is like, I would hammer the under. For instance, Philadelphia at 43.5, I laughed. What, do they think that Joel Embiid's going to play 70 games this year?
Yeah.
I don't. Do they think Paul George is going to miraculously go back to his old self after the miserable year that he just endured? Do they think Tyrese Maxey is going to be able to carry the load with VJ Edgecombe? I don't really know how they expect the Sixers to be at 43.5.
Right in that range, too. I'm shocked to see the Celtics also at 43.5.
Yeah, because you expect them to be taking a quote-unquote gap year, right, with Jason Tatum's Achilles tear.
Right.
I know that they still have some solid pieces with, like, Derek White and Jaylen Brown, but they've lost a lot from last season's team, Steve. I'm right there with you on the Celtics. A couple others that really stood out to me, the Pacers at 39.5. I don't think they're going to be a bottom five team in the NBA, despite losing Miles Turner and obviously Tyrese Halliburton for the year with that Achilles tear. Similar situation with the Celtics, though, Steve, is that they got their pick back. The Pelicans sent them their 2026 first in return for the 23rd overall pick, which ended up turning into the Derek Queen trade and everything like that. I think that they could just similarly with the Celtics take a gap year. And maybe they don't because they have plenty of depth. They can roll out some guys that are really solid. Another one that stood out to me, the Kings at 37.5. And if you're talking about the Pelicans sneaking into the top 10 for the Western Conference in the 2025-26 season, Steve, you got to take out a couple teams, right? Because you think the Spurs are going to make that leap too.
Right.
And I think Portland's going to be in contention to try and make that leap as well. For me, I think the Sacramento Kings are one of the teams that was in the top 10 this past year that's going to crater out of the top 10 in the Western Conference this year. So that's one spot, and then you'll have to find the other spot as well. You know, just kind of going down the list as well.
47.5 for the Lakers seems awfully high.
You'll have to see what happens. There's still more to be determined with the Lakers, what happens with LeBron. For me, the Raptors at 34.5 feels a little bit high. I know I'm mentioning a lot of Eastern Conference teams, and the reason that these odds are a little bit boosted for some of these squads is because they're going to be playing each other and the East is going to stink next year.
So bad.
The Nets at 21.5. Who do the Nets have that's going to help them win 22 games in the NBA this upcoming season? That's my question. So, you know, there's a few teams on here that I'm like, I am selling stock. But as far as the teams that you're buying stock on, I mean, the Pelicans are right up there. 31.5 feels low, Steve, in my opinion. The only way that they go under that total is, once again, if they get wrecked by injuries like they did in the 2025 season.
I hope so, Charlie, because it was just, it was brutal last season covering the team.
I know. But the talented pieces are there. And if you're expecting Yves Mesi to take that step entering year two, feel really, really good about your big man rotation with him and Kevon Looney, right?
It's like a broken record, though. We say it all the time. It's all going to depend on
Zion.
The health of Zion Williamson. Right?
I agree. But even then, Derek Queen is a really good backup four right off the bat in his early on in his career. Maybe he plays some small ball five. But, you know, apparently he's been playing the four with Mesi in practice leading into summer league. So you can kind of anticipate him playing the four with the Pelicans center rotation. So it's something to keep an eye on with him being an instant impact player for the squad. The wing rotation is fun, Steve. And maybe the guard depth is a little thin, right, where you have Jordan Poole right now. DeJounte Murray is going to be recovering from the Achilles tear that he suffered in January. It's the third player that I mentioned with an Achilles tear in this segment alone. So he's going to be out for quite some time. You bring in Jordan Poole as a combo guard that can play the one for you right off the bat. You have Jose, you have Jeremiah Fears. That's the one spot that you feel, okay, well, you don't feel great about the guard depth, but the wing depth you feel really good about. You have Herb Jones that can start at the two or the three, depending on the matchup. Same thing with Trey Murphy. Kind of switch the tweeners. Both those guys play out on the wing for you. Two different pieces, but two very valuable pieces. And then off the bench, you have Sadiq Bey, and maybe this Micah Peavy kid, man. Like, I've heard so many good things about what he can provide right off the bat defensively.
Right.
You know what Willie loves in young players. It's defensive effort. So maybe he has a spot on this team early as well, off the bench, alongside someone like Sadiq Bey. You feel great about the wing rotation. You feel now better about your power forward depth with drafting Derek Queen. And you feel good about your center rotation with Eve Misi expected to take a big step ahead of year two. And then you have the Kevon Looney signing as well. So it just feels like there's too much talent on this team to be sitting the sixth worst over-under total in the NBA, Steve. I don't know.
I feel like last year's memory kind of just is burnt into folks'
right.
You know, memory banks.
That's
there.
That's exactly what
and,
it is.
And they're not really considering, oh my goodness, this team was just decimated last season.
Just look at the roster. That's all I like when I'm looking through these teams and determining, oh, do I like the over or the under? Am I buying or selling stock in this team? Just look at the talent that each roster has. And you can talk about the coaching and the impact that that has as well. But if you're just talking about your 15-man roster for the 2025-26 season, the Pelicans, I think, are better than that win total from DraftKings. That's just my opinion.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. When we get back, we're going to be talking a little bit about the MLB draft and a little bit about where LSU players could end up hearing their names called on draft night. Aaron Fick, co-editor and national writer for D1 Baseball, joins us. So stay tuned right after this on WWL.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into Sports Talk. We are still celebrating LSU baseball's national champion, Jay Johnson, bringing in his second title for the Tigers. We're going to see plenty of those players heading to the Major League Baseball in the draft coming up very soon to help us break that down. Aaron Fitt, the co-editor and national writer for D1 Baseball. Thank you so much, Aaron. How you been doing?
Pretty good, fellas. How you guys?
Doing awesome. First week, before we get into some of the draft stuff, D1 Baseball just recently named Jay Johnson the National Coach of the Year after bringing home a second national title in 3 years for the Bayou Bengals. Just an overall awesome season for this Tiger squad, seeing how they developed and matured along the way, and a really remarkable run in the College World Series finals as well. Just your overall impressions of Jay Johnson. We love him here, and I mean, winning helps, but he just seems an overall really good guy, great personality, and someone that's just easy to get along with.
Yeah, he is, and he's in a lot of ways the same guy that he was 20 years ago when he was a young assistant at San Diego, learning the ropes from Rich Hill. And I've known Jay a long time now, and through every stop of his journey, he's gotten more and more impressive. But he's still the same, approachable, just friendly guy that he's always been. Now, that doesn't mean he doesn't have a killer instinct. I mean, he wants to win, and that's why he's been so successful. The job that he's done at LSU is just, it's so impressive. And we've never, in the 10 years of our website, we've never awarded the same coach this award twice until now. He's the first multi-time winner. And I think the reason for that is because, it's kind of a recognition of what he's established there, which is he's guided this LSU program into kind of a new golden age. And just his expertise, his masterful touch when it comes to roster construction. It's not just portal. It's not just buying stars in the portal. It's like they've hit on some stars in the portal. They've also hit on some nice supporting pieces in the portal. And they've continued to build really well the high school ranks. I mean, the homegrown core for this team, Jared Jones and Milam and, Anderson, all these guys, they were a huge part of this deal. It's not just, rent-to-players. And I think that's the criticism that gets leveled against LSU from the haters, right, is they've just got all this money. They're just buying championships. it's not what it is. I mean, the portal is out there for everybody. You know, a lot of people are spending money in the portal. A lot of people are really, really going all in on the portal, even more than LSU is. And so I just think that the way they've done it with, you know, blending the various different ways to attract talent and then developing that talent. And then you see the way their teams get better at the end of the year. It's happened every year, really, since he's been there. And this was another great example of it.
You know, Aaron, you mentioned Anderson, Kate Anderson, the ace southpaw for this LSU baseball team that helped lead them to their eighth national championship. I want to get your thoughts on Cade because I was looking at Kylie McDaniel's ranking for the 2025 MLB draft, and he has Cade sitting at number one. I know that Cade had a fantastic campaign, talking about the homegrown talent from St. Paul's right in our backyard here on the North Shore. I just want to get your thoughts on Cade and his projection at the MLB level. If you ask Jay, and we spoke with Jay a couple weeks ago, and he made his pitch, basically, that the Washington Nationals should take him number one overall and give LSU their second number one overall pick in the past three seasons. But your thoughts on Cade Anderson and where he could potentially go in the draft?
Yeah, we just moved him to number one on our board as well, our updated list that came out today. And, you know, for a while, he'd been right up there and just, you know, I guess the criticism is there as much ceiling? I mean, there are people out there who don't know if he's a true number one starter. They think he's a very safe floor, you know, number three, you know, maybe number two. For me, I think he can be a number one starter in the major leagues because I still think there's more to come. I mean, the way his arm action works, it's so easy. He's gotten so much stronger year over year. And I think there's, with his frame, there's room to add more strength. And then I think he'll throw harder even than he does right now. And he throws plenty hard, you know, I mean, up to 95 or so, whatever. And he holds that 92, 95 deep into games. And the advanced feel for three pitches, three secondary pitches that are all elite is really, really special. You know, I mean, you got a guy that can spin two different distinct breaking balls on the curveball and the slider and command them and the changeup as well. And he can miss bats with all of them. He can land them all for strikes. I mean, it's a really special combination for a left-hander with power stuff and feel and projection and everything. He checks all the boxes, great makeup, a performance track record. I just think the sum of the parts adds up to even more than you know, the numbers will tell you. And so, yeah, you can roll the dice at a Liam Doyle, you know, who can throw 100 for the left side. That's cool. But that's kind of a reliever look, you know, is what a lot of scouts think. And, you know, the other guys, you can kind of knock them. I mean, there's guys who throw harder than Anderson, but throwing harder doesn't necessarily mean you have a higher ceiling. I think that's old thinking that we need to get past.
Curious, Aaron, where you feel like a guy like Ethan Holliday ends up going? A lot of folks project he could be that top overall selection.
Certainly one of the top candidates for it. And, you know, I'm not particularly dialed in on the high school side. I'm so college focused. But, yeah, I mean, you know, he's on the very, very short list. If it's not Cade Anderson, I think it'll probably be one of those top high school guys. I don't expect there would be another college player that would go before Anderson. I think he'll be the top college player off the board.
You know, going with Anthony Ianson next, looking at D1 Baseball's projection, if him is the number 20 prospect from the college ranks, like he was so, so good, especially in the second half of the season, really kind of made that 1-2 punch with Cade Anderson that helped LSU, once again, get back to Omaha and capture their eighth national title. And Anthony Ianson at the next level, I know that people have said maybe the fastball needs a little bit of work, but the breaking stuff was just fantastic, and you saw it on full display with LSU.
Yeah, and that's been his calling card. I mean, since he was at UC San Diego, and you know, I remember last summer when he was with Team USA, I was talking with Eric Campbell, who's the longtime director for the collegiate national team, and he said it was the best breaking ball they had on the whole staff, you know, and they had all the best arms in the country on that staff. And he's right. I mean, that pitch is just an absolute wipeout. And it's not his only weapon, you know. I mean, again, it's a guy that can beat you and miss bats with multiple pitches. Yes, the fastball characteristics, you know, as the analytics guys will tell you, it plays a little below its velocity. I think there is some pitch shaping that can still be done there, and that's what these pro clubs are really good at. Frankly, is taking a guy that has arm strength and has a really good arm action and has feel to spin the ball, you know, spin the breaking ball. If you check those boxes, they can manipulate your grip or whatever it is they can do to kind of get more out of the fastball. And I think whoever drafts Ianson is going to have success with that because he does have feel to pitch. and he has great makeup. He has aptitude. He's an awesome kid. I really, really like him, and a guy that I'll be rooting for in pro ball.
Aaron, do you think that Ianson's going to be a first-round pick? I know the MLB draft is a little bit different, where you have the competitive balance picks and the compensation picks, and it's 43 first-round picks, and a couple different boards have him around 40, but it feels like there's multiple teams within maybe, let's say, the 25 to 40 range, especially once you get to those competitive balance picks and you see teams like Seattle and Tampa Bay and Los Angeles and New York, all these teams that are known for developing pitching. I think that any one of these teams from that range, basically around 25 to 40, could easily take him in the back into the first round.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. Absolutely. I think that's where he fits. I mean, maybe, you know, somebody jumps up and takes him even a little bit earlier than that. Because again, there is track record here, real track record, as well as stuff and makeup, checks a lot of boxes. And we have seen guys, you know, make jumps based on kind of their Omaha, I guess, stardom, the extreme stardom. I mean, almost legendary status, right? Like the Will Bednarz, the Mississippi State comes to mind as a guy, or Cade Horton from Oklahoma. I mean, these are guys that made themselves a lot of money in the College World Series. You know, I mean, in years past, that wouldn't have been available to them because the draft was before the College World Series. But now we've seen guys make that jump, that very late jump. And maybe he's, you know, in that category, just because, yes, he was already really good. He had a long track record of success, but to continue doing it at that level, you know, on that big stage, I think probably shows scouts even a little bit more that this guy's pretty special.
Aaron, curious your thoughts on if some guys that the Tigers could lose in the draft, but we're quite not sure yet. Someone like an Ethan Fry and Chase Shores. I'm just curious your opinion on what you think is going to happen with that, those two.
So those are good ones, because I could kind of see it going either way.
Okay.
I think Fry, you know, both of them have such big tools, right? The raw tools are loud. And Fry at this point is, you know, enough older that I think he's ready to go out and play. I would be surprised if he comes back. I mean, you know, I just think it's time now, and he's performed enough, and we know he's got huge juice. And, you know, I think probably that's a, I don't know, third, maybe fourth round pick, maybe second, even if the club really falls in love with the tools. I think he goes out and signs. Shores now, I mean, you can kind of dream on that guy coming back to school and maybe becoming a, you know, top five pick next year. I mean, if it clicks. Right now, there's enough risk there that maybe he slides some. But, I mean, how many guys, you know, with that kind of body throw turbo sinkers at 101? You know, I mean, it's just it's pretty rare. And so, again, wouldn't shock me if somebody, quote-unquote, overdrafts him based on the performance track record. I mean, the numbers might not tell you that this guy is a first-round pick, but everything else would tell you, okay, we can work on the command and just kind of take a flyer. It wouldn't shock me, but if not, you know, that's a guy that could bet on himself. He's got two more years of eligibility left. I mean, as an eligible sophomore, I know he's also maybe, you know, the third-year player, you know, so he's usually those guys, the clock starts to tick and they kind of want to get into pro ball, so they've had some success. But if he doesn't get the number that he wants, I could see it. I could see that guy taking a bet on himself coming back. I don't want Tiger fans to get their hopes up, because I think that's probably not that likely. I think probably they both wind up signing, but you know, there's a chance.
You know, another one that I'm interested in, Danny Dickinson, the second baseman from LSU. When Jay Johnson went out and made the move, it was so funny to see the response. Oh, Utah Valley. The heck is Jay doing here?
Yeah, our text line and callers were like, what is he doing?
And then LSU fans just get to watch him play, and he's unbelievable in the injury that he played through in the postseason as well. And Aaron, this was one of the most underappreciated parts about this LSU baseball team. As you know, their defense was unbelievable, especially on the infield. Stephen Milam, Danny Dickinson, Michael Braswell, they had three shortstops on the infield, basically. And then you have Jared Jones, who was excellent on the infield as well, and we'll get to him in just a second. But Danny Dickinson, number 37 on D1 Baseball's college prospect rankings, MLB.com has him ranked 80. Day one of the draft is 105 picks. It's those first three rounds. And I think he'll definitely hear his name called on night one.
Yeah, I think so. I think that is pretty likely. You know, it's a guy that has performed now for multiple years, put up big, big numbers at Utah Valley, and then, you know, went and played with Team USA, and then he put up good numbers with LSU, and despite, you know, playing down the stretch with that broken handmade. I mean, it's crazy. You know, the toughness that he showed and just the way he performed. You're right about the defense piece being such an underrated ingredient for this LSU run. I mean, it was a truly elite run prevention outfit, and it's not just because they had great arms. It's because they played great defense behind them, as we saw in Omaha, and he was a big part of that. So, again, another one that I, you know, coming in, I'll tell you guys, the first time I saw him in Frisco, saw him with LSU this spring, it was in Frisco, and you know, just, I don't know, something about him, he's kind of flashy, you know, and it felt like maybe there's a lot of bling going on here. Just maybe not my kind of guy, frankly. So it was my first impression. And then you hear him talk, and he's just got so much heart, and he's thoughtful, and he's got charisma, and he just, man, I'm in. I mean, that first day, I was like, oh, wow, like this guy's not who I thought he was. You know, you judge the book by the cover. And I just think that's impressive. And, you know, the organizations that talk to him, I'm sure they'll get the same impression. And he's going to go out and have a good pro career because he can do a lot of things to help the team win.
Aaron, Charlie mentioned it there. What are some of the projections right now with D1 baseball for first baseman Jared Jones? Where is he likely to end up getting drafted?
Yeah, that's another, again, interesting one because there's some risk-reward here, yeah. Right? I mean, the reward being it's elite, top-of-the-scales raw power that he has utilized pretty well. I mean, over the last couple of years now, he's hit plenty of home runs and been a good performer, but there's that strikeout piece. That is, you know, a red flag. I mean, frankly, there's just the track record of college hitters that strike out at the rate, you know, that he strikes out at. Getting to the big leagues and figuring it out, being really good big league hitters is not great. And so, you know, again, it's that's something that for a lot of teams, it's just kind of a hard and fast rule and model. Like they're not going to take a guy with that kind of strikeout rate, period. You know, after multiple years of college. But He'll get a shot because that power is special. And obviously, again, he's a winner. I mean, really a winning baseball player, even despite the strikeouts. He's shown some adjustability. And, you know, maybe you figure something out with the right hitting coach and you can kind of improve that selectivity a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, I think probably a top five round pick somewhere, something like that. I mean, maybe 5 to 7. I mean, something like that is probably where he fits.
You know, Aaron, it was a little bit surprising last year, I think, when Jared Jones, once you get to like the fourth round, the fifth round, and then the number starts to go down a little bit, I think we were all a little bit shocked that Jared Jones wasn't selected and that he made it back to LSU as, you know, draft eligible sophomore entering the junior year. But I think at this point, he's obviously going to get drafted. But if you had to look ahead to, let's say, next week, right? By the time we're sitting here next Tuesday, which player do you think we're expecting to get selected that doesn't get picked, whether it had to do with signability or the player wanted to come back, that you think would be a surprise for this LSU baseball program? I know you brought up Chase Shores, but, you know, is it Chase or is there anyone else that you're kind of looking at as well?
I think Shores, for me, is probably the one that, just because, again, that's a guy that I could see making that big leap, you know? I mean, because it's coming. You see it coming with this guy. I mean, he the fact that they stuck with him and he stuck with himself and became, you know, a national championship caliber closer that you could trust, you know, for a team that won it all at the end of the year, given where he was early in the season with the strike throwing and just kind of the Chase Shores thrill ride, you know, it's remarkable. I mean, how much better he's getting. And so I think you can easily envision that trajectory continuing, you know, if he comes back another year in college. Now, you know, again, like he probably will get paid enough to go ahead and sign. But I mean, if we've seen guys before say, hey, you know what? Like, I think I can come back and be a top five, number one overall pick next year. I mean, Mark Appel for Stanford did something like that. And I think he was a first round pick as a junior, late first rounder, I believe. It's been a while now, but came back and was number one overall the next year for Stanford. And, you know, he didn't wind up having a very good pro career, but that gamble kind of worked out for him. So that's still the one that I kind of think of that, you know, maybe he bets on himself. It could happen.
Aaron, thanks so much for the time, man. Definitely appreciate all your knowledge.
You got it, fellas. Good talking to you.
Thanks, Aaron.
Aaron Figg, co-editor and national writer for D1 Baseball. You can follow him on X at Aaron Figg. We'll be talking more about the upcoming MLB draft all week as we get ready. Was it Sunday, Monday?
Yeah, so Sunday is the first three rounds.
Right.
The top 105 picks. And I feel like we ran through a good amount of players that could go in that top 105 from LSU. With Cade, with Ianson, with Chase Shores, maybe, as Aaron kind of said, it's a little bit up in the air. He might decide to gamble on himself and come back. We'll see what happens there. That's kind of the one to watch. Danny Dickinson should go in the top 105. Maybe Ethan Frye sneaks in there as well as far as those top three rounds. We'll just kind of have to see. And then from rounds 4 through 20 will all be on Monday. So, once again, by Tuesday of next week, we'll know who got selected, where they got selected, what pick they got selected with, and who could potentially be making it to LSU's campus.
We'll see if the Pirates get any help coming their way on offense for poor Skeens as well.
Steve, I sent you that text that he has more war than he does wins as a pitcher. Have you ever seen that?
No, that's absurd.
I've never seen that before in my life.
Paul, we wish you the best. Hopefully you get out of Pittsburgh soon. Taking a break here on Sports Talk. We'll return with more on WWL after this. Wrapping up this hour on Sports Talk. When we get back, we'll be talking to Jim Eichenheifer. Eichenheifer, writer for thepelicans.com, also host of the New Orleans Pelicans podcast. Plus, we'll hear from Summer League head coach Corey Brewer, Micah Peavy, Eves Missy, and even more, a Pelicans Power Hour coming up here on WWL after top of the hour news. Who dat, folks?
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.